Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast is being brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.
So the whole world is on fire. I think we can agree it doesn't matter what your politics are. It doesn't matter what age you are, doesn't matter your race or your gender preference, the world is on fire. And we can all pretend that it's business as usual, and I see people doing that, just wandering around. They're in the mall, they're in Publix, they're just, life is life, no big deal. But I have to watch the news. And I have to pay attention to what's actually going on. And when I look at not just what's happening in Haiti right now, which has been literally handed over to rival gangs, but Cuba is on the verge of a total collapse. They've had blackouts. They have run out of food and power. Not that they had enough food or power in the months leading up to this moment. The government has actually gone to the United Nations. The communist government of Cuba has showed up at the United Nations begging for food, literally begging for food. And the people in Cuba are pretty ticked off. So you're seeing all kinds of unrest. It seems so weak to call what you're seeing in Cuba, what you're seeing in Haiti, what you're seeing in America. It seems pretty lame to call it unrest. It's a lot worse than unrest. When you have a communist nation begging for food at the United Nations because they're on the verge of a total collapse, I would say it's more than unrest. The country has been hit by a lot of restrictions that we've placed on them. The tourism industry just never took off the way it was supposed to when Barack Obama said, well, we're not going to have these embargoes anymore. A couple of years, people went, and then people came back and said, nah, go somewhere else. It's not fun to go to a communist country where the people who actually live there are suffering as much as they are. So that was the end of that. Their domestic product, somebody tell me what that is anymore. I remember when it was sugarcane, but you don't believe that today, that in any way, shape, or form, a country's going to do trade with Cuba for sugar. Why? All of the nations have sugar supplies. The economic situation is a very big deal for the Communist Party of Cuba, which has been controlling everything since Fidel Castro's revolution in, 1959? Think about that. The embargoes, all the things that were attempts to bring the regime down and didn't work, are working. You know, Cuba used to be able to import some agriculture, some sugar cane, I think some pineapples. I don't know. There were a couple of things that they were exporting. But that's not enough anymore. You've got young, educated Cubans who are tired of being hungry. They're tired of political repression. And you can't fix this without fundamentally changing the country's governance, the centralized state control model where bureaucrats are ruling every aspect of public life. Let me just say this as succinctly as I can. Communism doesn't work. So the political change that needs to take place has to come from within Cuban society. And so the regime is on borrowed time. The revolution is over. And the well-fed old guard that still runs the country, if I were them, I'd be planning my escape route. This is a significant test for the entire region. This is an opportunity. I'd love to get my friend on, Michael from American Heritage, because we've been predicting for well over a decade that this had to happen. And the fact that they hung in as long as they did is pretty amazing, pretty remarkable. But when you have an 18.5% of a GDP budget hole, and you have inflation, and you have to put in austerity measures for a people who don't have squat, who can't go to a supermarket and buy food. And then they look over their shoulder at what's going on in Haiti, which has turned into a mini mafia state with all these voodoo priests and prisoners running around and running like wild animals. Well, I'll probably get in trouble for saying that, but that's what it looks like. So now we have a presidential race. I don't know about the rest of you, but I went to the polls this morning. I live in a community where there are probably, I don't know, I'm going to be overly generous. I don't know, there might be 100 Republicans in my entire community. And that was the only primary that took place. And so there were no congressional candidates in the primary on the ballot. It was simply a presidential primary ballot. It had 6 or 7 names on it. I should have taken a photograph, but they don't like when you do that. And the last name on the list was Donald Trump. And I'm standing there looking at this overly large piece of paper, you know, these big long ballots. It's one thing if you've got a bunch of amendments and you got a bunch of different races, you can make sense of it. But one race and really only one person running seemed like an enormous waste of money and effort. But I felt I had to cast my vote nonetheless. And because I went to the trouble of actually registering in that party just so I'd be able to vote in the primary. And at the time, my thinking was I could get rid of DeSantis and rid of Nikki Haley, but they got rid of themselves a while ago. DeSantis has been out for as long as he was in. And Nikki Haley, you know, see ya, wouldn't want to be ya. Your political future is garbage. So here we have this presidential race taking place, and Cuba is probably not on anybody's radar. I don't believe Joe Biden is thinking about Cuba. I don't think he's really thinking about Haiti either, although that's a little more pressing because Governor DeSantis is telling us that the amount of migration we can expect is going to be legion, and he's already right. We've already interdicted, you know, boats. So they may have to address that. But come on. We weren't prepared for Cuba to implode at this exact moment. It doesn't sound like we were paying much attention to it. I can speak for myself, and I have a number of Cuban friends and associates, and I can tell you that Cuba is never far from their hearts. But at this point, it's pretty far from their minds. They're Americanized. They're not going back to Cuba. Communism can end, and they may open up an Airbnb there, but they're not going back there to live. That's not happening. One of the most well-integrated immigrant groups in America is Cubans, because they didn't come over here in a desperate attempt to finally have a decent life, they had great lives. They fled a communist dictator. So I'm watching all this, and I'm watching a couple of people who are big in Cuba trade, U.S.-Cuba trade, and there's an economic council that addresses that, and they're pushing for the U.S. embassy to at least approve a list of some small Cuban companies with which Americans can do business so that we could have some kind of trade relationships and maybe alleviate some of the pain that they're going through. That's not going to be enough. Again, we're always too late. And we're always insincere. Oh, yeah, we really believe that Ukraine should be fighting. We're not going to really help them. We're just going to use them and make people feel really bad for them. But ultimately, they don't really stand much of a chance without boots on the ground, whether it's European boots on the ground or American boots on the ground. I think I knew that from the beginning. And since we had made a collective decision in this country that we weren't going to do that, this has just been a long, drawn-out, painful process for the Ukrainian people. But not as long as the Cubans. 1959. It's 2024. I was 6 years old when Fidel Castro's revolution took place in Cuba. And as you know, I'm no spring chicken. It's amazing. So I don't know what happens now, but I don't think it's looking good for this hemisphere. Haiti in flames, Cuba in flames. And that's what we know about. We're looking at some of these South American countries, which hide a lot of what's going on there and have the ability to do that. Like, we gave up on Venezuela, right? Just sending Venezuelan prisoners over here. Just open up the prisons and let them go. A relief valve, so to speak. So we're not paying much attention yet to Venezuela, yet to Argentina, yet to Brazil. But I am telling you, they're in line right behind Haiti and Cuba for a fire sale. Only there's no bargains. No bargains at all. That's my job. My job is to watch all these things. I don't just watch what's happening in American politics. You can get pretty nuts just reading Supreme Court opinions and trying to figure out what's in the mind and heart of Chuck Schumer. It'll take a lot of time, but in the end, you just feel like your hair hurts. So I look around the world to see what's happening. That's my job. And then I try to report to you what I see. And let me tell you what I see. It's going to rain. It's raining already. Don't forget to download the 850 app. 850WFTL.com is our website. You can go there, participate in our contests, listen to the podcasts from the No Restraint podcast that I do every week, to the Unidentified Alien podcast, to the morning show, to my afternoon show. There's a lot of information that's available to you. Just do it. Download the app or visit the website. Let me take a quick break. I'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So I just watch and wait because there's something obviously going on. And the majority of Americans are just exhausted. They don't know how to even respond any longer. So they tune out. And that's scary. It really is. I was looking at the fact that Peter Navarro is in prison, for contempt of Congress. Now, Peter Navarro is basically older than me. Now, I don't think that the 4 months, I believe he has to do 4 months, will kill him. But it's certainly going to be a lot harder for him than it would be for someone who wasn't his age or my age. He said, I'm going to walk proudly in there and do my time. I will gather strength from this. Donald John Trump is the nominee. Sometimes you just have to hold on to one thing. And at 2 o'clock this afternoon, that's what Peter Navarro said he was going to hold on to. So that came and went. And he did go to the Supreme Court asking that they postpone or eliminate the prison time. And they said, no, we're not going to move. You got to go. And it was funny. I think a press member of the press said to him last night, have you spoken to Donald Trump? And he said, hey, you know what? I'm claiming executive privilege on the conversation, which is funny. I mean, the man still has a sense of humor. I used to interview Peter Navarro many years ago when we were doing financial broadcasting on 850. WDJA is what we called it. And he was a regular guest because Peter Navarro is one of those economic wonder minds that literally had a great track record, not just with the newsletters stuff and the obvious stuff that a lot of financial advisor guys get famous for. Peter had a way of explaining the current market and its movement, which was very easy for anybody to understand. Now, when he became an advisor to Donald Trump, they had had a long-standing relationship. And unlike a lot of the other people who had long-standing relationships with Donald Trump, Peter Navarro never wavered. He now surrendered to this sort of 11th, he had that 11th hour request for the Supreme Court to give him a reprieve. They said his appeal really didn't stand up to scrutiny, and so he was going to have to go. And this is all over, and this is what infuriates me. This is over his refusal when he was subpoenaed by that fake fraud January 6th committee in the House. The Liz Cheney and all those other morons who were lying to the American people the whole time. He was subpoenaed and he said, no, I'm not testifying. I have privilege. I have executive privilege. I was talking to the president of the United States. I am not revealing any of those conversations. I'm not providing you with any documents. And it was a claim of executive privilege, which, of course, the Supreme Court Chief Justice said, you can't just ignore Congress. That's what the appellate court had said. And he was obligated to appear before Congress and answer questions seeking information outside the scope of any asserted privilege that he was claiming. So in spite of the fact that I see him as a victim, U.S. District Judge Amit Mehta, let's see, who do you think appointed, never mind, said he was not a victim, despite his claims. You are not the object of a political prosecution. You aren't, Mehta said. You have received every process you are due. According to who? That is the question. And unfortunately, we're not even entitled to the answer to that question anymore. Our freedoms are getting whittled away one at a time, and apparently it doesn't bother many Americans, or they're just exhausted. As I said before, there is this fatigue that has set in, and I'm sure that's what the opposition counts on. You'll give up. That's what lawfare is. You go after someone through the courts, and you relentlessly pursue them. I think 91 indictments of former President Donald Trump is pretty clear proof that lawfare has been waged, is being waged. And not only is it costly in terms of dollars, he can't even find a bond company that's willing to use his real estate. You have to have cash, apparently, to the tune of $500 million. Or else the DA, this Letitia James, can just start seizing your property. Is that going to sit well, even with Democrats? Is that going to sit well with people on Wall Street, hedge fund managers? Is that going to sit well with successful CEOs of successful companies? I don't think so. It doesn't sit well with me. And I certainly, you know, the thought of having to come up with $500,000 is daunting to me. Never mind $500 million. And if you couldn't use any assets other than cash, well, then I'm pretty much SOL if they asked me for $500,000 worth of assets to write the bond. So we look at these things and we scratch our head and we go, this can't be fair. This can't be right. And then we just get quiet. And we apparently just get used to it. And they keep drip, drip, dripping with the lawfare. And they wear down most people. They weren't able to wear down my friend Fain Lozman, but he's a rare bird. They don't seem to be able to wear down Donald Trump, another rare bird. But eventually, the message that it sends to all the rest of us is, don't think for a moment that we won't go after you tooth and nail until we put you in prison for the rest of your life. Because that's their intent. And if they could do it to Trump, they could do it to you. And if they could do it to you, they could do it to me. And if they could do it to me, they could do it to my son and my granddaughter. We're in some pretty perilous times. So can't scratch your head anymore. You got to put up a fight. I don't know if the battle can be won. I don't know if the war can be won. I don't. But I know one thing for sure is I will not stop fighting until the battle's over. I'm not going to wear out. I'm not going to give up. And neither are you. And if we don't, then we just might be able to withstand what's coming. And trust me, as my husband said the other day, it's finna rain. It's going to rain. And it's not a conspiracy theory. Because that's what they thought when Noah was building the ark. By the way, I saw this movie with Russell Crowe about the ark, about Noah. I think it was called Noah. I thought it was a great movie. It was definitely a lot of poetic license. It wasn't a direct biblical interpretation of the story, but it was great. It was very, very engaging. Jennifer Connelly is one of my favorite actresses anyway. She was in it. And Russell Crowe I like very much. And Anthony Hopkins. What can you say about Anthony Hopkins? He played Methuselah. So if you can see that movie, I don't know. I think it was a special moment in some kind of cable station that said, oh, you can watch this movie between 2 and 5 on this day and 6 and 8 on the other day. They do that, you know. I don't know, but my husband does. And we got to watch that. And I thought it was very, very interesting, very entertaining. So you might want to see that. But I get to there from the fact that Noah didn't care what anybody said. It didn't make sense. They're in the middle of a desert. It hasn't rained in years. And he's building an ark that's big enough to hold two of every animal. Meanwhile, where are the animals going to come from? How are they going to recreate the world? Well, if you either believe it or you don't, and Noah believed it. And so I believe America survives. I'm really not sure how that happens or how long it's going to take. But I do. I believe it. I don't think that we're finished. I don't think it's over. But you got to be willing to stand up against the bad guys. If you're not willing, as my friend likes to say, get out my way. All right, let me take a break. Stay right where you are, and I will be right back with all of the political stuff that we talk about, or at least that I am forced to talk about. And every now and again, I'll get a good piece of news, and I'll try to talk about it, and then I'm not even sure. Like, is it good news? or do I have to read between the lines? Like, for instance, the Supreme Court has made a decision which I totally agree with. And I haven't had a chance to read the whole thing yet. So I'm nervous because the devil's in the details. It always is. But they allowed today Texas to enforce a law that basically says local law enforcement officials can arrest people who are suspected of having come into the country illegally. Can I say illegal immigrants, or am I going to get in trouble? If I'm going to get in trouble, I've been in trouble for enough many years. So the high court temporarily blocked enforcement of the law. And then the Supreme Court issued a decision to reject an emergency request that was made by the Biden Department of Injustice, which is not my line. I stole it from Mark Levin, but it's so accurate. And which that they had argued, the Biden administration's DOJ had argued that states have no right to enforce immigration law and that it violates the Constitution's Supremacy Clause. Now, the Supreme Court did not provide any reasons for the decision, but Justices Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh filed concurring opinions. And the three Democrat-appointed justices, Elena Kagan, Ketanji Brown Jackson, and Sonia Sotomayor, did dissent. Well, that was predictable. So with the ruling, the immigration law can now go into effect, which lower courts consider the law, which is, I think it's called SB4. And it was passed by the Republican-controlled state legislature in Texas last year, and then Governor Abbott signed it into law at the end of last year. I think it was like in just before Christmas. And what SB4 allows is that local and state police can arrest people who have illegally crossed the U.S.-Mexico border and even impose criminal penalties. So state judges are literally given the power to order illegal immigrants to be deported. This just makes sense. It's amazing to me that you have three Supreme Court justices, regardless of what their political opinions are, who don't understand that if you break the law, we should be able to impose criminal penalties on you. In her concurring opinion, Justice Amy Coney Barrett wrote that the High Court has never reviewed the decision of a court of appeals to enter or not enter an administrative stay. When it's entered, when an administrative stay is supposed to be a short-lived prelude to the main event, which would be a ruling on the motion for the stay, yay or no. So she said, I think it unwise to invite emergency litigation in this court about whether a court of appeals abused its discretion at this preliminary step. What I'm trying to tell you is that this never should have even gone to the Supreme Court. None of these stupid appeals by the DOJ or the Injustice Department really qualify for relief at the Supreme Court level. They just don't. You may not like the law, and obviously Kagan and Sotomayor and Jackson Brown dislike the law. That's why they dissented. Because they said it would upend the federal government's authority. Well, but the federal government has not been practicing what it preaches. It has not been upholding federal immigration law. So the court now gave a green light to a law that says, well, guess what? If the federal government won't enforce the law, then individual states have a right to do that. Now, is it constitutional? I'm not a constitutional expert. Justice Sotomayor, in her dissenting opinion, which was joined by Justice Jackson, said that it is not, that the Constitution does not allow for a state to override the federal government, particularly in the issue of immigration, which is a federal issue. But you know what? Ken Paxton, the Attorney General of Texas, said, let's just roll with it. The law is now in effect. This is a win for the state of Texas. And the judge that blocked the enforcement of the law, saying that it was, you know, the same argument that I just said the justices made about the federal government having to supersede, or a state not being allowed to supersede the federal government's authority over immigration. Well, guess what? Something had to happen. Something had to be done. The federal government has not been enforcing immigration laws. As a matter of fact, they have deviated from even forget the actual laws themselves, but the idea behind the law of a nation having sovereignty over its borders. It still amazes me that we're having this as an argument. How can you have a country without borders? How can you have borders and then be unwilling to enforce them? What this says to me is it's okay with you if there's an invasion at the border. And I know it really upsets people when I use that term, but that's what's happening at our southern border and now our northern border. If you listen to the No Restraint podcast, I'm talking about what's going on in our northern border. It's an invasion there as well. And we're not even talking about overstayed visas and what goes on in the oceans. But these are those moments when the country is forced to at least have a conversation about these things. You almost have to get it in front of the Supreme Court or nobody will talk about it. The press doesn't want to write about it. They've dug in. You know, the left-leaning liberal press does not want to address the issue of illegal immigration. They will not even allow you to use the term illegal alien. I've been fighting this fight for 30 years. An alien is simply someone who does not have a legal, legitimate right to be in any given country. If I go to Mexico uninvited, if I sneak across the border into Mexico, they have a right to kick me out. They have a right to their border. And if I cross that border without applying for legal entry, then I broke the law. And guess what? They will deport my hiney. But here we sit around going, well, no human being is illegal. And nobody should tell people that these borders must be observed. And we stole this land. And oh my gosh, the arguments go on and on and on. And all I say is, but the laws exist for a reason. You cannot have unbridled immigration, period. It's not good. It's not good for the country. It's not good for the citizens of the country. I don't think it's particularly good for the citizens who leave their own countries in total disrepair and don't even worry about fixing their countries. Instead, they just keep sending back money. I'm sympathetic, but I'm not happy about it. And I think the Supreme Court's decision was righteous. If the federal government refuses to uphold immigration laws, then let Governor Abbott and let Governor DeSantis and let whatever governor chooses to enforce laws in their state have at it. Because this is the only way we're going to cut this down. I'm not just critical of Joe Biden's administration's border policies. I am furious at what's happening to my country. And when the White House tries to shift the blame and say, oh, well, you know, this is a broken system. It was broken before I got here. Well, you were there for 8 years as the vice president. And you had a majority at one point. So if it was so broken, how come you didn't fix it? And you're not fixing it now. You just threw your hands up and said, well, this might work well for us because we're losing voters. You know, I'm watching pastors preaching all over the country saying, like, hey, if you're an African-American, if you're Hispanic-American and you keep voting for Democrats, what's wrong with you? And, you know, Donald Trump's in trouble again for saying that, for daring to say, like, I don't get it. Well, I don't get it either. It's definitely not in your best interest. So now you just can't. You just can't ignore these things anymore. They're in our face. And we'll have to see. Oh, by the way, Donald Trump has finally launched a lawsuit against ABC and George Snuffleupagus, saying that they tarnished his reputation with a comment that Georgie Boy made about rape. It's just legal warfare at every level. Don't forget, coming up after me is Eric Erickson, followed by Joe Pags, and then by Lars Larson, and then the Overnight Guys until 6 a.m. when Jen and Bill will be back with the South Florida Morning Show, followed by at 9 o'clock by Brian Kilmeade, and then followed at noon by Dan Bongino. And then, of course, I always get to come back at 3, but I still have a segment left. So don't touch that dial. I'll be right back. If you just couldn't get any stranger or stupider, well, then stop thinking. Because a judge this month dropped gun charges against an illegal migrant in Illinois, sparking a debate about the rights associated with the Second Amendment. Whoa, hold your horses here. So you mean if you're not an American citizen, you still have all the same rights as a citizen of the United States of America? How's that work? Are you entitled to legal representation too? And does the American taxpayer have to pay for it? I'm just asking, because this is going to get messy. Why would you have a district court judge by the name of Sharon Coleman of the Northern District of Illinois said that she dismissed a firearm possession charge against Heriberto Carvajal Flores, who was illegally in the United States when he possessed a handgun in the Little Village neighborhood of Chicago back in 2020. The court finds that Carvajal Flores' criminal record, containing no improper use of a weapon, as well as the nonviolent circumstances of his arrest, do not support a finding that he poses a risk to public safety such that he cannot be trusted to use a weapon responsibly and should be deprived of his Second Amendment right to bear arms in self-defense. Wait a minute. How does he get those rights? This is a judge appointed by Barack Hussein Obama. So that should, you know, give you some idea of how this happened. He was charged under Title 18 of the U.S. Criminal Code, which legally disallows undocumented individuals to possess firearms and ammunition or to receive any firearm or ammunition which has been shipped or transported in interstate or foreign commerce. The defendant, who contended the firearm was possessed for self-defense and protection of property during a time of documented civil unrest in the spring of 2020, had never been convicted of a felony, a violent crime, or a crime involving the use of a weapon. Okay. And your point is? He's not. He was not an American citizen. Why would he be entitled to all of the same privileges and rights that American citizens are entitled to? I can't even scratch my head when I read a story like that. It's so off the reservation. It makes so little sense that you, who are you going to argue about this with? I know liberals are strange birds, but really? Is it, you hate guns. You guys don't want anybody to have a gun. You don't want me, a law-abiding, Second Amendment quoting American citizen. You don't think I should have a gun. So then why on earth would you defend the right of a non-citizen who's in our country illegally? You want to afford them the protection that you literally on a daily basis try and begrudge me? It doesn't pass the smell test. You know that. This was the first time that they took up this case, this Carbajal Flores case, because the Supreme Court had voted 6-3 to strike down a 100-year-old New York law about 6 months or that required individuals need to have proper cause to get a license to carry a firearm outside of their home. That was the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, that case. So how can you use that case as a rationale to allow an illegal immigrant to take advantage of my protection under the Bill of Rights, under the Constitution? It doesn't even make any sense. But that's, I'm getting used to it. It doesn't have to make any sense. To the left, it doesn't have to make any sense. They just have to repeat it often enough and make some sympathetic looking, you know, characterization of the poor guy who's just trying to defend himself. Not that you out there in my listening audience are entitled to defend yourself, but Carbajal Flores, we have to protect his rights at all costs, right? Even though his first act was to disobey our laws and come into our country without applying, okay? Oh, I thank you for your time this time. Until next time, sorry if I upset your day, but that's my job. I'll be back tomorrow at 3 p.m. if it be his will and he delays his coming. I'll have a guest, a medic from Israel with me, and on Thursday I'll be talking with Congressman Waltz. So God bless you, God bless Israel, and God bless the United States of America. See you tomorrow at 3.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast has been brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.